Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today we are going to read text 2. Text 2 is the beginning of the description of the abode of Lord Krishna. It goes on through verses 3, 4 and 5 also, and actually gets quite esoteric, but the more esoteric parts of it we'll come to tomorrow. This is more just like a general introduction to the subject of the abodes of Krishna, Goloka, and particularly actually Gokula. Goloka means Krishna's abode in the kingdom of God, and Gokula means right here, where we are right now, the Vrindavan on this planet. So you can repeat after me. Sahasra Patra Kamalam Gokulakyam Mahatpadam Tat Karnikaram Tadama Tadanantam Shasambhavam. Translation. The spiritual place of transcendental pastimes of Krishna is portrayed in the second verse. So that's a little sort of introduction to the translation. This is now actually the translation. The super-excellent station of Krishna, which is known as Gokula, has thousands of petals and a corolla like that of a lotus sprouted from a part of his infinitary aspect. The whirl of the leaves being the actual abode of Krishna. I think you can get the idea, but let me just quickly draw a little diagram just to illustrate on the board. Yes, so if we have a look then at the purport, then he begins by explaining how Gokula, where we are now, we're not in the material world, despite the rickshaw wallahs, the heat, and it's not even that hot now, and, you know, a few gundas, quite a few dogs and pigs and other things. Actually, we're in the spiritual world, despite certain aspects of the external appearance. So that, how it's all working, is going to be explained. But the basic first point is that Gokula, this Vrindavan, like Goloka, is not at all material. And it's manifest from the infinitary aspect, the verse said, Ananta Angsha. So what is that infinitary aspect? That is Lord Balaram. Now, so there's a discussion then in the first paragraph of the purport about Lord Balaram and how he's working. Lord Balaram, this is going to come up in our test also, by the way. Lord Balaram, his position is very interesting and very important. He's the first expansion of Krishna. He is directly Krishna himself. The only difference is their bodily colors. Otherwise, they have the 64 qualities they have, and, you know, they are essentially the same person, except for that one distinguishing factor. However, there is one very important difference also, and that is a difference in consciousness. And this we're going to be asking about in the test, as we said. how Lord Balaram's the same, but actually he's really quite different. Even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, thanks. Did everyone mark themselves present? So Lord Balaram, even though he is practically, you cannot find a difference other than the color. So even though he's practically the same, but his consciousness is very different. Krishna, you could say, is very aware of the fact that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's relating like that. He's accepting service, basically. Krishna is accepting service. But Lord Balaram, he is in the mood of a devotee. Even though he's definitely the Supreme Lord, and he is practically no less worshipable than Krishna himself, but he doesn't enjoy that so much. Actually, Lord Balaram is very intelligent. Took Krishna quite a while to figure this one out. He did eventually, and that's why he appeared as Lord Chaitanya, that it's more fun being the servant than it is being served. Krishna, after he returned to Goloka Vrindavan 5,000 years ago, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna was puzzled. How is it? I'm the supreme. Everyone is serving me. And, you know, I have the very best. I have all facility to enjoy, but I see that all these people, my devotees, particularly, of course, the inhabitants of Vrindavan and keep passing it around. I don't know if everyone's marked themselves present yet. Okay, pass it forward. Pass it up here. So Krishna was noticing that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and particularly the gopis, they were enjoying a standard, an experience of pleasure much higher than his. He could see that. In fact, he noticed that the gopis in particular were enjoying about 10 million times more than him. That's a lot. There's just another, totally another dimension altogether of enjoyment through serving. So Krishna was thinking, gosh, you know, how can I get in on this? So therefore he appeared as Lord Chaitanya. And then he experienced that, and even he took the position of Srimati Radharani, and he really experienced it. So Lord Balaram also knows this. Not since the last 500 years or so either. Lord Balaram has known this eternally. So he's always serving. And here, where there's mention of this ananta ansha, this infinitary aspect, means like the unlimited spiritual potency, which everything in the spiritual world is based on, that is all coming from Lord Balaram. Yes. Lord Balaram expands into different forms, and all of them are simply there to serve in very important ways. Like in the spiritual world, he is there as Balaram, but he expands as Ananta in Vaikuntha, or in the kingdom of God. And as Ananta, Lord Balaram is basically providing the entire facility which exists in the kingdom of God. All the energies, all the planets, all the Vaikuntha planets, and just the spiritual nature generally, is based on, it's existing. All these things are existing by the energy of Balaram, particularly in his form as Ananta. Then, as Ananta, in the kingdom of God, he's also serving Krishna in very personal ways. He serves Krishna as his house, his jewelry, his bed, his throne, his sandals, his clothes, his pillows, his Brahman thread even, his umbrella. These are all forms of Lord Balaram. Therefore Balaram, particularly as Ananta, he's sometimes known as Ananta Shesha. Shesha means paraphernalia. And Ananta Shesha means unlimited paraphernalia for Krishna's enjoyment. So this is Lord Balaram. Even to take it a step further, in order to assist in the different pastimes, in the different rasas, Balaram, for example, in the conjugal rasa, manifests as Ananga Manjari. And she is very, actually she's sister of Radharani, and she is practically an even more intimate assistant than Rupa Manjari. If you go into the Gopinath, any temple of Gopinath, you'll see that there is Krishna and there's a female figure on either side. So normally when we are looking like here at Radha Shamsunda, then Radharani is on our right. But with Gopinath, Ananga Manjari is on Krishna's right, and Radharani is on Krishna, Ananga Manjari is on our right of Krishna. Radharani is on our left of Krishna. So there's a very intimate connection there. And that Ananga Manjari is Balaram. So then he expands as Mahasankarshan. From Mahasankarshan comes Mahavishnu and the other Vishnu forms, who are maintaining and sustaining the material creation. Then he expands in the material creation as a second form called Ananta Shesh, who lives right at the bottom of the universe in the Patala region. And actually is going to be described, that is going to be described further on in text 47 when we get there, so we won't go into that right now, about Ananta Shesh in the material in Patala. But the basic idea is that Lord Balaram is doing a lot of service, and he's expanding into so many forms in order to serve. And that is how he sees himself. Then, of course, he's Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda, all he would do would be go around glorifying Lord Chaitanya. Nothing else. So this is the mood of Lord Balaram. Wonderful mood. Now, in this case, the purport goes on to describe, Baladeva is the mainstay of that energy, spiritual energy. Then there are two aspects of Baladeva's transcendental nature. And we've already mentioned this, basically, that one is how he provides the infinite spiritual manifestation. That is his energy. And second is that he provides the infinite accommodating space for insentient gross things. That's the material world, where the insentient gross things are. So he is providing through Mahasankarshan, then Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Shiradakshay Vishnu, and then Ananta Shesh at the bottom of the whole thing, he's actually holding everything up, the material creation. So in that way, in those ways, Lord Balaram in those forms is sustaining the entire material realm also. However, here, oh, and even another interesting point is that Lord Balaram expands as Garuda to carry Krishna. He's a partial expansion of Lord Balaram. However, we are particularly concerned here with talking about Gokula. That is what we're focusing on. Gokula and its relationship with Goloka and its actual non-difference from Goloka. And therefore, you know, it can be identified as the topmost exalted, wonderful spiritual place of all. So, now he goes into a little bit, slightly technical sounding description of how it's working. The uniquadrantal delineation of material universe will be dealt with in the proper place. Okay, that's text 47. When we get there, you don't need to worry so much about it now. But how Ananta is working in the material world, how Balaram is working in the material world, is particularly going to be discussed in text 47. And of course, how Balaram is manifesting the material world through Mahavishnu is going to be explained from about verse 7 to about verse 21. So in those places, we will find the description of the uniquadrantal delineation. What uniquadrantal means is that sometimes the whole creation, spiritual and material, is described as being four quarters. Four quarters equals one whole. So the spiritual part of the whole creation is described sometimes as being three quarters. And the material world is described as being one quarter. So uniquadrantal means a quarter. Uniquadrantal means one quarter. So that is going to be discussed shortly. And the triquadrantal extensions, this is referring to the spiritual realm, or really the triquadrant, that's the spiritual world. But here he mentions an extension of it. That's Gokula. It's an extension. It's in the material world. But it's part. It's connected. It's really part of the triquadrant. So he repeats this concept in the next sentence. This very majestical extension of the triquadrant, of that exalted, lofty, spiritual world. This very majestical extension portrays the manifested, lofty, rich feature of the vaster, unlimited region, which is beyond the mundane nature. In other words, the extension, which is Goloka, extended into the material world from the kingdom of God, actually it portrays, it contains all the majesty and all the amazing spiritual characteristics and features that Goloka does. Despite the rickshaws, I don't know if they have rickshaws in Goloka Vrindavan. I don't think they have these big trucks and things like that. So anyway, how it got to be like that, that is another thing. But actually the fact is that it is exactly that place. It is an extension of that place, Goloka Vrindavan. Then he goes on to say, next sentence, this majestical power of unlimited spirit, in other words, this potency of Lord Balaram, emanates on the upper portion, emanates from the spiritual world into the most charming Gokula. So by Lord Balaram's spiritual potency, this Gokula where we are right now is extended from Goloka Vrindavan, and as such, you shouldn't make distinctions. Yeah. You know, like, in our cases, sort of on a theoretical level. But in principle, we should understand this Gokula in those terms, as being that extension by the energy of Balaram. That Goloka is being projected into this world as this Gokula. And so he concludes this paragraph by saying that hence Gokula, which is identical with Goloka, is the supreme plane of existence. Yes. So, in the second paragraph, the English actually gets a little tricky, so I'm not going to go through it in detail. All I'll say is, at least about, say, the first half or first half of the second paragraph, is that he discusses how the only difference really, if you can call it a difference, effectively it's not, but the only thing which could be said to be possibly different is that Goloka is in the higher realm and Gokula is in the mundane realm. Yeah. Actually, it doesn't mean that they are different in terms of what they are, but just in terms of location. There's interesting description in a book by Sanatan Goswami called Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where one devotee named Gopakumar, he's living here in Vrindavan at Govardhan Hill, and it's a bit of a long story, but eventually he goes back to Goloka Vrindavan. He kind of, step by step, and eventually he gets there, so he's there. He goes back to Godhead, enters his eternal relationship with Krishna, and that is like the total perfection of life for him. However, then he comes back to Gokula, and then he goes back again to Goloka, and then he comes back to Gokula. So he starts this thing of going up and down between them. And he is explaining all this to one Brahmin who he met. And he's saying to that Brahmin that now, sometimes I don't even know which one I'm in. Yeah. I don't know if I'm in that one or this one. Because all the people are the same. The animals are the same. The flowers are the same. He, of course, is on that totally liberated platform. And that is his perception. He doesn't really make a distinction any longer. So that is the fact transcendentally. And the only way you could possibly consider trying to draw distinctions, in one sense, is that one is in the spiritual world, one is in the material world. So, unfortunately though, there is a covering over Gokula. There's a covering. And therefore, people like us, we cannot exactly see it like Gopakumar sees it. There's a covering consisting of rickshaws, trucks, crumbling buildings, and various other things. Yeah. But there's some nice verses I took out, written by Prabodhananda Saraswati, who is an associate of Lord Chaitanya's and the uncle of Gopal Bhatta Goswami. He lived here, and he could see that. He could see it. And he describes it very nicely. So I thought I could just read a few verses. And it'll give us, you know, a little idea. Not that we should start imagining things, but at least we can bear it in mind that, you know, it is really like that, but it's just me. I'm the problem. Therefore, I'm not seeing it like that. So he says, O friend. Actually, he wrote this book called Vrindavan Mahimamrita. It's very long. And he's just simply glorifying Vrindavan. These are just a few verses. O friend, please control your mind and senses. I think that's the first step. Yeah. And go to Vrindavan, which is a mine of nectar, and which is so glorious that even millions of books by the greatest poets and philosophers cannot describe a single ray of light from the host of jewels of its virtues. All glories to Sri Vrindavan. This is this Vrindavan where we are. Which with a single particle of its glory, which cannot be understood even by Lakshmi, Shiva and all the leaders of the demigods, makes numberless Kamadhenu cows, Kalpavriksha trees and Chintamani gems appear insignificant. In Vrindavan, the leaves on the trees are made of emeralds. Okay. The flowers of diamonds. The new flower buds of beautiful pearls. The newly sprouted leaves of red Kuruvinda jewels. The many fruits, all filled with various kinds of nectarian tastes. Of rubies, the rain of an incessant shower of nectar, and the bumblebees of sapphires. There's a few of them out the window there. Anyway, you know, I don't think we see it like that. Oh, look at Vrindavan, so beautiful, with many blissful, splendid groves of Kalpavriksha trees. With many parrots and other birds, intoxicated by singing Vedic hymns, glorifying Krishna. With many deer so pleasing to Krishna. With splendid transcendental lakes, ponds and streams, all filled with water, sweetest nectar. And with mountains of valuable jewels. I have seen Vrindavan. Plunged into an ocean of sweetness by the amorous pastimes of two persons more splendid than gold and sapphires and more glorious than millions of ratis and kamadevs, cupids. So this is the real Vrindavan, which Prabodhananda Saraswati could see, it would seem, and which Gopa Kumar could see, and great exalted spiritual personalities can see, but unfortunately at this point we can't see. But in principle we should always bear it in mind like that. And even though we can't see, well, I can't see. I don't know about yourselves, but I assume you can't. Even though we can't see, but still it's a fact that if, as he said in the first of these verses, if we control our minds and our senses and try to be fixed up properly in Krishna consciousness, then even though we may not see that the leaves are emeralds, and that Krishna is everywhere with his associates. But at least there's some sort of subtle transcendental perception for the devotees who come and nicely try to approach the Dham. So therefore, in my experience, devotees, you know, if they do, as long as they control their minds and senses, and don't commit offenses. Now, if you commit offenses, I've seen some people come back from Vrindavan in horrible conditions, actually. But if you control your mind, control your senses, and try and approach the Dham nicely, then you'll come away knowing, feeling, that actually I was just in a very transcendental place, and somehow it's got to me, despite me, it's sort of got to me. And in this way, we little appreciation can arise, because there is a little transcendental perception by the grace of Krishna. Now, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes on page 5, about a third of the way down. Says Gokula is a spiritual plane. Hence, his condescended position in the region of material space and time, etc. Condescended means that he didn't have to do it, but he has agreed to appear in this material world out of his kindness. It in no way restricts Gokula. No. Gokula is not restricted by having appeared within this material realm. We may not see it as we've just been reading Prabodhananda Saraswati seeing it. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says that though the eye of an observer, though the eye of an observer is impeded by a cloud when gazing at the sun, and though the tiny cloud can never really cover the sun, still the clouded vision apparently observes the sun as covered by the cloud. So the cloud is our material consciousness. Because we're attached to the material world, so our eyes have been covered by this cloud. And therefore when we look at Gokula, we may not see that the leaves are emeralds, and we may not see all these things. We may see in a kind of material sense, but that's our problem. That's our problem. And when one becomes more advanced, going down a little further, about seven or eight lines up from the bottom of the page, he says, success in identifying the true self is finally achieved when the screen of the gross and subtle coils are removed by Krishna's mercy. However, the idea of Goloka is seen to differ from Gokula until actually going to be discussed at considerable length even in the purport of text 37, which is about a 10 or 12 page purport. Anyway, we'll get there when we get there, but for the time being we could just note the fact that there are some differences. There are certain pastimes which Krishna performs within the material realm, which are different from pastimes in the spiritual realm. For example, in the spiritual world, there are no demons. But here in Vrindavan, Krishna killed many demons. Krishna killed many demons. Every day Krishna killed, when he was out herding the cows, around midday one demon would come and he would kill the demon. And that was a sign, a signal. Time for lunch. And then later on, maybe around this time or a little later, another demon would come, Krishna would kill the demon, and that was the sign, time to go home. So every day this was going on, and Srila Prabhupada himself actually explains that if these demons had not come and interrupted the pastimes at lunchtime and in the late afternoon, Krishna and the cowherd boys would never have stopped for lunch, because they were just too caught up in their playing, and they would never have come home. They would never have bothered. But this was the arrangement of Yoga Maya, to interrupt the pastimes for lunch break and time to go home. So there are demons. Actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this. He says there are pastimes which are Nitya Leela. That means they go on in Goloka and Gokula. Like the Rasa dance, for example. Krishna herding the cows, for example. These are Nitya Leela. They go on in both places. Then there's another category called Naimittik. Naimittik. N-A-I-M-I-T-T-I-K-A. Naimittik Leela. That means pastimes which are only performed in the material world. Naimittik. So they include killing the demons. In Goloka Vrindavan there's certainly no demons. Sometimes devotees dress up as demons. Sometimes some mysterious unknown person appears out of nowhere, comes running into the village, calling out that Bakasura is coming. Agasura is coming, and everyone panics. And then the person disappears. And no one knows who was he, where did he come from, where did he get his information from. And no Bakasura comes. Or no Agasura comes. It's a false alarm. Sometimes there's a description that some Brijbasis are wandering through the forest and they come across what is something like a billboard. It's this big kind of, you know, board or whatever, maybe the size of the wall, with a big painting on it of Putana. So then they panic and come running back, and then everyone panics, and then they all take shelter of Krishna, and somehow Krishna pacifies them. But they never wonder, who put that billboard up there? And when they go back there, it's not there. So sometimes it's like there's rumors of demons, basically, in Goloka Vrindavan. But in Gokula, there are genuine demons, and many, many demons coming, trying to kill Krishna. So that is a difference. In Goloka, in Gokula, the gopis, many of them are married. And there are real husbands, like Abhimanyu, who lived at Yavat, which we hope to go to in about 10 days' time. So, but in Goloka there are no husbands. However, in Goloka, there are rumors of husbands. Some gopi suddenly appears just when the others are about to meet with Krishna, or maybe they're already meeting with Krishna. Some mysterious gopi comes and says, "Oh, your husband is coming! Your husbands are coming!" And then they panic, because they think they have husbands, but there are no husbands. They don't even exist. They're just rumors. But in Gokula, there are real husbands. Many of the gopis had real children through the natural material process of childbirth. Others, they of course were the gopis who had just come from becoming perfect in their previous lifetimes. Those who were eternal associates who descended with Krishna, either they didn't have husbands, although most of them did, but if they did, there was no contact. Like Abhimanyu. We'll explain more about Abhimanyu when we get to Yavat. But Abhimanyu, his relationship with Radharani is illusory. They are inhabiting the same house or palace, but there's no contact. It's described that Abhimanyu never even touches Radharani's shadow. So there's actually no real contact at all. But in order to enhance the pastimes in Gokula, there are these real relationships. And in the material world, in Gokula, Krishna takes birth. And his eternal associates take birth. But of course, Krishna doesn't exactly take birth as such. But there's some sort of thing that happens. You know, he enters, first of all, Vasudeva's mind. Then he goes into Devaki's mind. And then into her womb. This is all just by his arrangement. Then he just steps out, fully dressed, with ornaments, in his original spiritual form. And Jiva Goswami explains in Krishna Sandarbha that the same thing applies with his eternal associates. They don't really take birth. There's something which looks a bit like they sort of took birth or something. Not going through the 9 months or whatever in the mother's womb and coming out in that way, but there's something like that, as there was with Krishna, some vague resemblance. But then they appear in their eternal bodies, not in material bodies. And like Krishna, we mentioned a little yesterday at the end, he went back in his eternal body. They also go back in their eternal bodies. But while they're here, they're not thinking that, yes, here we are, we came down from Goloka, and here we are in Gokula, and, you know, these are just pastimes. There's a very interesting description and explanation given by Jiva Goswami, that after the Govardhan Leela, sometime not long after, Krishna showed the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. He gave them some, like, mystical transcendental vision, so they could see into Goloka Vrindavan. So Jiva Goswami says that Krishna, although it's not mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Krishna was very careful not to show them any of the people there, because they are themselves. And he says, confusion would have arisen. So therefore Krishna showed them only like the environment, but none of the people. And when they saw it, oh, they were astonished. They thought, this is very amazing to see Goloka. Now there's another difference. And this is very important difference. This is, I think, the most important difference. This is a very wonderful difference. That Goloka, Gokula, this Vrindavan, can be approached by conditioned souls. Goloka cannot be approached by conditioned souls. That is not possible. But Gokula is merciful. Gokula can be approached by people like us. And, you know, even though we can't see that the leaves are emeralds and so on, but gradually we can pick up some sense of how this is really a very special transcendental place. So this is a fourth type of difference. Actually, when Krishna was here, the fact that Gokula and Goloka are not different was exhibited. Like during the Govardhan Leela, this is just one example. It's described in the Bhagavatam that when Krishna would go out herding the calves, there were many calves. The number which is given, or term which is used, is asankhyatai. Sankhya means to enumerate, to count. Asankhya means you cannot count. And Srila Prabhupada says that we may talk of thousands, millions, billions, trillions, tens of trillions. Prabhupada says, When we go beyond tens of trillions, then we can use the term asankhyatai, asankhya. It means you cannot count. There's no point in trying to. Yeah, there's no real point. So there were that many calves, and there must have been many cows to be mothers of that many calves, and loads of people and other animals. But when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill on the little finger of his left hand, they all fitted under. Govardhan Hill is about 25 kilometers around. So you could, you know, if you lift it up, you could fit a lot of people or animals under, but not tens of trillions. But they all fitted under. Why? Because Govardhan Hill is not just that 25 kilometer hill which that's not ultimately what it is. Actually, it is transcendental, totally transcendental entity. So our acharyas in their Bhagavatam commentaries about that Govardhan Leela, in that particular place, they make the point that all the living entities in existence could have fitted under Govardhan Hill. Yeah. Not just tens of trillions, but all in the material and spiritual realms could have fitted under. Or, for example, not exactly about Gokula, but about Dwarka, because it's also the abode of the Lord. It's described in the Krishna books that King Ugrasena in Dwarka had personal bodyguards, 10 quadrillion. It's an awful lot. There's 5 billion humans on this planet. He had 10 quadrillion simply who are personal bodyguards. So anyway, that is transcendental. Yeah, so there are many things we could say about this, but the basic point is that we should not misunderstand. Gokula is not different from Goloka. In a sense, we are already there. Because when Gopakumar came down again, it wasn't that he fell down. He was still there. But the problem is simply our consciousness. So that we have to address by becoming Krishna conscious. Any comments or questions? He may be there. Because he is the Supreme Lord and he cannot really deny it. But still he enjoys serving more. Yeah. He enjoys serving more. He has different things. Lord Balaram, we haven't got time really to go into an in-depth discussion of his personality. But he has many different, favorite activities. He enjoys negotiating. He enjoys problem solving. He enjoys coming in between two people who are having difficulty and working it out. And there are pastimes in the 10th canto where he does this. He really enjoys it. Lord Balaram is a very sporty person. He loves the game. He loves a competition. But mainly, he loves glorifying Krishna. He just loves glorifying Krishna. That is his heart and soul. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're also performed in Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah. Two ways of seeing it. One is there are different areas where he's in different ages. One is that different people see him at the same time as being in different ages. That version is given in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. That Krishna was out at night having the rasa dance as a teenage boy. But he just came scrambling in and got into bed just about half an hour before it was time to get up. So Mother Yashoda came to wake him up. She was trying to wake him. He couldn't wake up. And Mother Yashoda sees him as her little boy and thinks, oh my poor little boy, he's so tired from herding the cows yesterday. He was working so hard. Then she sees the kumkum from the gopis is on his body. And she thinks, oh, it's some red oxides from Govardhan Hill. He went to catch one calf which strayed on Govardhan Hill. Maybe fell and some red powder from the ground got on his body. And the scratches from the fingernails of the gopis, she thinks, ah, these are cuts from thorns. So she sees him as her child. And she breastfeeds him even at that point. But actually at the same time, he's having his conjugal pastimes. So, it's like that. Oh yes, everything's there. It's all very flexible to help Krishna in his pastimes. Yeah, it's very flexible. Like Narada Muni, that was in Dwaraka of course, but the same principle applies. He went to see Krishna in the 16,108 palaces. He went into one, it was morning. Immediately went next door, it was night. Then he went next door, a few minutes later, it was lunchtime. So time is very flexible. And it's simply a background for Krishna's pastimes. Yeah. Every night is a full moon night in Goloka Vrindavan. Yeah. There's nothing other than full moons. So it's very flexible. And like here, they had the first rasa dance down at Vamsivat. And they thought, the gopis thought, that the night had been shortened to about 5 minutes. But actually it had been lengthened to the length of a night of Lord Brahma. 4 billion years. So time is very flexible. And it basically just provides like a background or a scenario sort of context for the pastimes to take place in. Yeah, it's not that time is dominating. If it appears to dominate, it's just to enhance the pastime. Yeah. I think, anyway, we can take more questions perhaps tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.